All right, hello everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Cookbook. This is episode 38, and today we're joined by my good friend Umar Sheikh. Now, Umar, we actually weren't too close before recording this podcast. We were keeping in touch through Instagram, and we had a mutual Pariksit Busnet, who I also did a podcast with, I believe mid-2020. He was one of the first few guests there when I first started the podcast. So definitely check it out. Umar learned some email marketing initially through Pariksit or Splash, whatever you want to call him as. And ever since then, you know, he's kind of applied it, came up with his own systems, things that work for him. And now he's sitting pretty well, you know, he's doing well for himself, looking to niche down. So today's episode is everything email marketing related. And I was excited to record it because when I sat down with Splash, we didn't dive too deep into email marketing. That was a lot of mindset, discipline, and lifestyle type of discussions. Whereas this, it's all about email marketing. So if that's what you're looking for, then this is definitely the episode for you. Lots of best practices, lots of do's and don'ts, lots of Umar's experiences, things he's seen from other people as well. You're definitely going to learn a lot. I definitely did. So, yeah, with all that being said, hope you get a lot of value out of this episode and enjoy. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Cookbook. This is episode 38, and today we're joined by Umar Sheikh. So, Umar, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, doing great. How are you doing, Mohammed?
I'm great, bro. Thank you for coming on today.
Of course. So,
sweet, man. Yeah. So we'll start off. Just give a deeper introduction about yourself. Talk about, you know, where you were before, how you got to where you are now, everything in between. So, yeah, let's go, man.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah. So starting off in terms of like the whole entrepreneurship and, you know, going all like freelance and solo mode, I started off actually not with email marketing. There's a couple of ventures that I did prior to this. And I actually started when I was 15. So when I was 15, I was in about like 10th grade. I was still doing high school, of course. And I started off by doing SMMA. So it was a very popular thing around that time. So given about 3-4 years ago, that's what everyone was doing, right? Mm-hmm. And especially in Toronto, it was something that was blowing up at the time. Because you had realtors popping up, you had dentistries, chiropractors, a bunch of these practices that needed a service, and not a lot of service providers were there for it. So there was actually this course that, you know, I saved up. I didn't have a job at the time, so I would just save up money from like flipping certain things. So I just saved up about like close to a grand, and the course was around $700. So, you know, I had some money left over, but basically I got the course, and it was, you know, it's called 30-day SMMA. Long story short, it wasn't really as knowledgeable as I hoped, but I still definitely took action on it. And, you know, I made my money back and then some, but it was definitely something that taught me a skill. And it also taught me something in the space as well. Not everyone in the space is going to be as knowledgeable or be worth it for your money, right? You know, you might just be buying into something and thinking that, oh, this is going to make me money for sure. That's not always the case, right? So that was my first sort of learning lesson. I was in that for about a year or so. I barely made it. I was working very hard, but in a month, like I'd probably make $200 from like doing that. But I was doing hundreds of outreaches per week and stuff. I was doing everything that I was supposed to do. But yeah, you know, at the time it was such a saturated thing, given my age as well. I had lack of resources. I couldn't necessarily go out to a bunch of places in downtown Toronto. I'm based in Scarborough, go every single day and, you know, connect with these people. And unfortunately, that was like sort of my downfall, but it did turn into something else that I was approached by, and actually my brother recommended me to him as well. And it's very ironic because you did an episode with him the other day, but with Jordan, he had this thing called a content agency, or ACE, and I believe he's starting to do something like that again. So I ended up joining his thing with the money that I saved up from the last venture I was doing. And that was the first successful thing that I did. I probably had a really good, I made a couple of thousand from it as a, you know, 16, 17, or at the time I was 16 years old, and it was the first sort of successful thing. But even that at a point had its limits because I was going into stores connecting with, like, I remember the main niche that I was targeting at that point was chiropractors. But there's only so many chiropractors in my area, and as I started to go out and grow in terms of location, I was getting a lot more no's, a lot more people that just didn't understand it. A lot of people that were like, well, you're 16, visibly see that, you know? And, you know, that's where it sort of shut me down. And then that's when I basically had a realizing moment that I can't do anything like this in terms of local, right? There's a lot of things that happened that, like, for example, at the time, agencies were popping off, e-commerce was popping off, people were doing stores. And my brother at the time, he was, you know, he's still even right now doing drop shipping, or he's running stores. So from that, I was very interested in that sort of niche. And I sort of started doing some, I guess, like, I sort of started dabbling into e-commerce at that point, but I didn't really jump on the fact of drop shipping or anything because I was too scared of the upfront investment. And now looking back on that, I'm sort of glad that I was skeptical about it, because if I wasn't skeptical about that, then I wouldn't be at this point, right? So fast forward a couple of years, or about a year or so since I was doing the content stuff, right when COVID hits, that's when all the chiropractor shops closed down, all of these businesses, these small businesses, they closed down. So virtually my entire, I was at the time probably making a close to a grand per month. All of that income sort of went away because these offices were closed, right? So that's when I really realized that there's no way I could possibly do this, especially in this state of sort of a depression at the time because everything was closed. So that's when I was interested in e-commerce. That's when my brother, all of these things, I'm so thankful for my brother. He told me about, and you know, obviously it's a lot on me for me to go ahead and take that advantage and, you know, actually approach that proposal. But I'm so glad for him to actually tell me about it. And that's where I met Mr. Splash Man PB, or New Edition Splash. And it was amazing because I ended up actually buying my brother's course. And my brother bought the course back in January. He didn't use it because he wanted to use it for his email marketing on his stores. He didn't really use that much. So he was just like, hey, if you want it, I'll sell it to you for a thousand. And the main reason he did that wasn't so much for the money, but was actually for, so I actually had a drive. I actually had a reason to actually make money back. So looking back on that, if I didn't pay that money, I probably wouldn't have strived to do that. So right around March time, that's when I got into it. That's when COVID hit in 2020. So from March to June, I wasn't really taking it focus. I wasn't doing too much work. I would probably pick it up here and there as a hobby, right? And then I really started getting into it when I saw people inside the group, and they're making like X amount of money. They're making 10 grand per month, 11 grand per month, you know, upwards of 20 grand per month. And then I was like, there's really, you know, this is an opportunity. This is a very good opportunity for me to set my foot in. So then from there, after June, that's when I started taking seriously. And within a month, I was able to get my first client. And I got my first, like, largest payout from that client, which was close to 2, 3 grand. And I've never experienced that type of money coming all at once, right? So that's when I was like, if I just had, you know, a few more of these guys, I would be at that mark. So that's when I really started getting into it. That's when I started, you know, kicking it off with outreach. I was doing over 100 DMs per day. I was doing 50 emails per day. I was doing all of this by myself. And then eventually it got to a point where I was getting more clients and clients as I went. My income was going up gradually. One month I'd be doing 3K, one month 5K, one month close to 10K. Then it would just break beyond the 5-figure mark. And now, even now, I'm close, nearing towards like anywhere from 10 to 30K. That's where I range off from right now. And I'm, like I mentioned before earlier in the or right before this podcast, my goal is to get to that 50K mark, which I have the blueprint to get to that point. It's just a matter of, you know, how much time am I willing to dedicate towards that. And I now have a larger purpose since I'm in school as well. But yeah, overall, that was my journey from ages 15 to now. I'm 18 now. And, you know, I'm definitely gonna be sticking with email marketing for the future as well, because it's going great for me. I have a whole team built around it, and overall, it's just killing it for me.
It's amazing, man. I appreciate you sharing all that. And it's
Of
pretty
course.
crazy because, like, from the moment you started up until COVID, we had like, it's kind of scary how many similarities you and I had. Like, we first started with an SMMA course. We didn't have the same one, but that's how we started. Then, right after that, we ran into Jordan. And that's what, like, really made us some good money at the time. And then we're kind of just messing around with the space here and there. And then it's crazy because once COVID hit, like, I wasn't in the freelance agency space at the time. I was doing personal training, gym stuff. And when COVID hit, obviously the gym industry obviously took a huge hit. And then from there, my income also just went away. So it's kind of crazy how the timeline was matching up. So really sick. And like, again, congratulations for all the success so far. And again, man, 50K per month, just around the corner.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So moving on. So I know you kind of came across email marketing because, you know, you were saying you're really grateful for your brother having this course and all this stuff, but put yourself in a situation where, you know all about all the services, like let's say Facebook ads, content, social media management, email marketing as well, SEO, all these different services. Yeah. Why would you go for email marketing compared to, let's say, something super popular like Facebook ads?
Right. So like you mentioned right there, it's something that's super popular, and for you to stand out in this market right now, in this day and age, it's just unbearable, right? You need to have an excessive amount of connections to make it inside the, ad agency game. And I've seen it firsthand. A lot of my friends that I'm closely working with right now, they run agencies, but when they tried to successfully run an agency about a year ago, it wasn't working. An ad agency about a year ago is very difficult to run that because the quality of clients just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they're either already working with a media buying agency or they just genuinely did it themselves, right? And it's sort of one of those skills that a lot of people would want to learn themselves aside from handing it off to someone else. Because if you have a skill to, you know, run ads for your store, you're basically saving, you know, X amount of ad spend per month to give to this other agency or this percentage every single month. Mm-hmm. As for email marketing, it's the same thing. But the thing is, no one, I'd say about a year ago, I could probably name on my right hand how many people were running a successful email marketing agency. Mm-hmm. And that would consist of, now they're considered as really top dogs. You have Chase Diamond, you have Joshua Chin with Kronos Agency. You have various other people that are now popping up on Twitter, but they've been doing this for a long time, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, what Splash basically did is he sort of saw an opportunity of creation of one type of agency, and he was around for the last 3-4 years mm-hmm. during the ad agency era, and he realized, you know, why couldn't we do this with email marketing? Because this is a service in itself that can easily make someone 30, 40, even upwards of 50. I've seen mm-hmm. myself for my clients off of their back end, right? So why is it something that it's underappreciated? Why is it something that not a lot of people are doing? And you know, if you look at it now, it takes no upfront cost. It takes literally just time for you to set aside per day to do outreach. And when it comes down to it, if you're already inside this industry with e-commerce and everything like that, then you'll be successful running an email marketing agency so long as you have the connections. I've seen clients that I used to do email marketing for. This is crazy. And they've basically broke off completely from making stores and stuff. And they went ahead and they made their own email marketing agency. And their agencies are far successful than mine because they have the right connections, mm-hmm. or they have the right connections, right? I could probably count maybe 3 or 4 of my past clients. They broke off completely from running stores and everything like that just to run an email marketing and SMS marketing agency. And that should just tell you how powerful of a industry that it's going to be in the next, I'd say 2-3 years, even next year or so, you'll see. And right now, exponentially it's been growing over the last, I'd say, 6 months, because people are realizing, once again, it takes no upfront cost. All you have to do is steady outreach, and you just have to have a good sales mind as well as a good closing mind. And that'll, you know, I've been doing that for the last couple of years, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And it just those skills directly transferred over to email marketing. The only skill I had to learn was actually email marketing itself. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yeah, the thing with email marketing as well, I remember Splash mentioned this in the podcast that I did with him, is with email marketing, like, not only does it take no upfront cost for you to start an email marketing agency, but even for the clients that you have, the only cost you're spending is just, let's say,
for the software.
Exactly. Yeah, they pay once for the software, they pay monthly, whatever the plan is, mm-hmm. and that's it. With Facebook ads, you're paying ad spend every single month, you're always paying.
Yeah.
So that really is a key difference. And as well, correct me if I'm wrong, don't people say like email marketing has the potential to make like 30% extra revenue for you?
Oh yeah, 100%. Like after the call, I'll definitely pull up some accounts and show you, but like our baseline is anywhere from 20 to 40%. And it's not difficult at all to get up to that 20% mark. The flow, the base templates Klaviyo gives you on alone average anywhere from 6 to 8%, just the templates, without you fixing anything, without you having any sort of agency or helping you out. So yeah, that's why, like, if you were doing 100 grand right now, on a store and you opened up Klaviyo, you set aside maybe 3 minutes every single day just for you to go ahead and click some flows, turn them on. You'll be done within the week. It doesn't take that long to set them up at all. You'll be good for the next month and generate anywhere from 6 to 8%, even upwards of like 10%, depending on how good your or customer retention rate is and your engaged customers are. So it's definitely something that you can set up, you don't have to touch, and it'll passively make you an extra 10%. Now, obviously, if you want to get to that 30% mark, that's very doable. But that's where, hiring an agency, hiring someone that is an expert in that field comes more into play. That's what makes most sense. Because if I was a store owner, I'm doing $100,000 per month. That is money that is coming from my ads, organic, TikTok, whatever it is, that's coming for sure. Now, if I want to add on an extra stream of revenue, right, how can I do that? There's other ways to do it. There's, putting more money into different outlets and stuff, or I can just use what I currently have, which is your data, your lists, your customers, something that you already have, something that you basically paid monthly for just to get those people. Why aren't you using it, right? And a lot of people overlook that. I signed a client the literally 2, 3 days ago. He runs a streetwear brand, and he does close to $100,000 per month. And I told him, just check your customers list. I want to know how much emails you have. So he clicks it and opens it up, and he realizes he has 26,000 people, and he didn't even know he had that data. That's the crazy thing. A lot of these people, like, they're so zoned in, and it's not their fault. Never, I'm not blaming them. It's not their fault at all, because they're so focused and they're so dialed in what really makes sense to them, which is running ads, creating good content for the product. And that's how you know someone really has a passion for it. If they're constantly going out of their way, they don't care about the cost, and they're doing that. Now you get sort of a break moment where it's like, well, damn, I have 26,000 people, or I have X amount of these people, right? What am I doing with this information? Am I going to use it? Of course you want to use it. So how am I going to use it to the best of your ability? There's a right way to do it, and there's also a very wrong way to do it. And I've seen a lot of people burn their domains, destroy their lists, do so many bad things to the customers, to the point where if you send out an email to 10,000 people, maybe even 300, 400 people won't even open them, right? So there's also a risk that you take with this, right? Doing it by yourself. So that's why I always recommend going with the right person. Whether starting off, I always recommend starting off on your own, but when it comes down to it, you want a professional behind your back end, someone that really understands it, and someone has a vision for where that list is going to go, right? For us, we always guarantee our clients minimum of 15 to 20% within our first 3 months. And we do that as an underselling factor, because we know within the first 90 days, we'll be able to get them way past that 20%. Right. It's just a matter of time, us collecting data and us going ahead and engaging all the customers to make sure they're signing up to a list that not only is giving them incentives and bonuses and promotions, but also caring about them, letting them know that we're here for you and we're not only here to take your money at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's amazing. I really enjoyed that like in-depth explanation, and it reminds me of this conversation I had with one of my friends. He owns his own agency, but it's a Facebook ads agency. But
Yeah.
like he offers email marketing as as a side service or an
Yeah,
upsell.
and a lot of people are starting to do that as well because they see the opportunity. If it's
Exactly.
very easy to set up, it's very simple to set up.
Yeah, and I was asking him, I was like, aren't a lot of e-commerce clients or just e-commerce stores in general, aren't they already running some sort of email marketing? He's like, yeah, they are, but it's not optimized. And it kind of goes
Yeah.
back to what you said. It's like, do it yourself. You may get like 6-8%. Get a
Yeah.
professional, you're looking at 20 plus percent. So,
Yeah, exactly.
yeah.
And to in today's age, like before about a year ago when I was doing it, I used to think like 25% was amazing and stuff. But as you naturally, you're doing your craft for such a long time, you realize small little, I guess, hacks that no one else knows, right? And as time went on, I realized those small things that, okay, if I implement these things, this is for sure gonna land inside their inbox. This is for sure gonna get them to open the email. This is gonna for sure get them to click and actually convert, right? And those small things that someone with experience like 3, 4, 5 years. These pioneers that have been doing it since 2014, 2015, when no one was around, to in today's age, they're able to sell, like, for example, PDFs. For example, Chase Simon, he has really good, I guess, fan base or base of email marketers. Literally, he has a community of email marketers that pay attention to his content. I pay attention to his content because he's been around it for such a long time, and it's one of those things that you're better off, following and listening to someone like that, a true pioneer in this game, than without listening to them, right? But at the end of the day, yeah, any sort of store that doesn't have email marketing in today's market is just it's just willing to die out. And especially if you're a brand, right? At the end of the day, you need email marketing for your brand image, for everything that comes with the brand, because a lot of people are switching over to, you know, DTC stores as well as, you know, purely brand images. The day of drop shipping is sort of in the past now because consumers are getting smarter day by day. And, you know, the number one way for you to have a more professional looking brand and image is having a very well done email backend.
Yeah, and I'm glad you plugged in Chase Diamond as well. That guy is amazing
Amazing.
at what he does. So,
Amazing.
so good. And it kind of, you know, before I move on to the next question I've written down here, you've probably gotten this at least a few times in the past. You know, you tell someone what you do, whether that's a client or a friend who may be like, you know, trying to get into like the
Interested.
online game, right? Yeah. And they're like, oh, email marketing, but I'm signed up to like so many newsletters and I don't even open them. How is this profitable? What do you have to say to that?
So you're the wrong type of consumer, right? You're not the consumer that we keep on the list, and whoever's running that list, they don't understand it as well. So a little gem that obviously any good email marketer would know is you never want to send emails or blasts or anything like that to the entire list, right? And there was a time where I used to do that, right? But recently, I'd say over the last since last Black Friday and Cyber Monday, so close to a year ago now, I realized that it's never okay to send a blast to your entire list. If you have 10,000 customers on your list, you don't actually have 10,000 engaged customers, right? So for you, for that person that's opening up their email or email inbox and saying, "I don't even open this, why am I getting it?" Well, you shouldn't be getting it in essence, because if you're an engaged customer, then it would make sense because you'd be opening, you'd be clicking on it, you'd be converting, right? So it honestly just comes down to the type of consumer you are and how you react. And of course, you might not be opening those emails, but there is someone that is, and there is someone that's purchasing. Because if no one was opening them, no one purchasing them, they wouldn't be doing email marketing.
Yeah, and I know for email marketing, you can do something called a list segmentation, right? Where those people who don't really open the emails, you can put them in like a whole separate category and then keep the engagement, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Exactly. That's something that's huge that a lot of people overlook, or at least I notice a lot of people overlook. Just sending out blasts to the entire list is definitely a no-go. You shouldn't be doing that. That's the number one way for you to hurt your domain. That's the number one way for you to like just get terrible open rates, like 5-6% open rates. That's the number one way for you to just shoot it down.
100%. Yeah, it's very similar. And like my next question is going to be like the similarities between email marketing and Facebook ads. So I guess this is a good transition, what I'm about to say. It's like a lot of people that run Facebook ads for their e-commerce store, they'll be retargeting people that visited their website like 180 days ago. And I tell them, I'm like, look, it doesn't take someone 180 days to realize, hey, do I want to buy a t-shirt or not?
Add this, yeah.
Lower that down to past 30 days or past 60 days
Exactly.
max, and you're going to see the results. So I really like that you brought
Exactly.
that up.
100%. And I like that you pointed that out, the unison between Facebook ads and email marketing, because without one or the other, neither will be profitable, right? Facebook ads, obviously, by itself, they will get you to a certain point. But if you have that backend with you, any sort of traffic that you get, cold traffic that you get, it's sort of like a funnel. It'll go through the Facebook ads. If the Facebook ads don't do their job and people, you know, add to cart, purchase and stuff like that, the email marketing will be there to save it, or the SMS marketing. Whatever the backend is, it's going to go ahead and save it.
Yeah, like it reminds me of this one time. This is like really the only time I've seriously dabbled into email marketing. So I was helping one of my friends with this startup, right? And what would happen, this is how we had like a little funnel going on. So it's me, my friend that runs the startup, and then my other friend who's like super into the Facebook ad, like he has his own agency and stuff. He ran lead form ads on Facebook with the Zapier partner integration. And then as soon as they fill out the lead form, Zapier then sends me the contact information, the email
And
marketer.
puts it directly into,
Exactly. They're in my list and now they're in my segment or the flow, whatever you want to call it.
No, that's I used to do that once upon a time when I was first starting. There's so many. I love that you brought up Zapier, but there's so many amazing things you could do with. I'll only ever use Klaviyo because it's one of the most intricate or integrated apps on Shopify or within Shopify, and there's
I
just
agree.
so many cool. There's like I've used MailChimp, I've used ActiveCampaign, I've used a bunch of these platforms, and they don't have anything compared to what Klaviyo has, right? And so for example, like you look at Facebook, that's one of the head honchos in terms of ad marketing or any sort of ads, right? There's obviously like Snap and different places that are now opening up purely because there's less spenders on that app and there's low CPMs and CPPs, things like that. But when you look at when anyone ever mentions ads, the first thing you think of is Facebook ads or Instagram ads, right?
Yeah, and as far as email marketing, I guess you can say versus Facebook ads. Can you think of any other similarities or differences? You know, if someone's trying to
do
one or the other.
So when it comes down to it, like it's very similar in the sense of what you have to do for the ad. So I'll call the email copy and then the ad copy. So obviously, you know, ad copies, you have to have good content, good, I believe it's like header lines rather than subject lines in email. Headlines, so I'll go through email. Headlines, yeah. So in email, you have the subject line. You need to have a good subject line. If you have like spam-inducing words, it's going to land inside the spam box. Or obviously, if you have a terrible subject line which with a bunch of links and like different things, that's obviously going to get blacklisted, right?
Yeah.
So you need to have a good subject line paired with a good preview line. You don't always need a preview line. I don't always use preview lines, but it's something good to have. Mm-hmm. Gives them a little sneak peek to actually open up the, for people to actually open up that email. Right. And then you get to the real bulk of the email and you have the content within the email. So there's two types of emails that I notice will perform very well. One's going to be just literally only text-based emails. So plain text, no HTML, nothing like that. Just plain text emails, because there's no sort of triggers that are going to go ahead and go into your spam box. And then there's also content-based emails as well. So what I do now, and what a lot of people are starting to do now as well, is they'll take the entire copy of an email and just put it within an image. And then they'll just have that image within the actual email, because it's compressing all of that information, because each text, each word inside an email, when you send it out, it's basically its own thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll have your text box and another text box. That's too many triggers. When you have just that one image that has everything that you need just within that one little image box. And when you do that, there's less triggers that go off within Gmail. You'll have a much cleaner deliverability, and overall it's going to work out best. Very similarly with Facebook ads and your ad copy, right? You don't want to have a terrible ad copy. You don't want to have something with, you know, 5, 6, 7 different paragraphs. No one's going to read that long, right? Mm-hmm. As well as the actual creative of the video, whether it's a video, a carousel, whatever it is. You want to make sure it's visually appealing for the customer to stop and actually look at it and engage with it. And the number one main thing that's unison in both of these things is the CTA, right? What's the CTA? Where does it go? And how is it going to get that conversion, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe the CTAs, as far as Facebook and email go, they're pretty much the same. They're complete one of ones. They'll basically tell you something along the lines of buy now, click here, shop now, anything like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, really looking into it, the actual how it looks, they're pretty much the same thing. It's just mm-hmm. that how does it get to the customer? Those are only different things.
For sure, yeah. And we're going to get into more best practices for emails later on. But one thing I do want to say, I know Klaviyo, however you want to say it, has so many good like free resources on YouTube and their website about like how to do the actual like email itself. So good.
Their tutorials are phenomenal. You don't even, in this day and age, you do not need a course to get you far with email marketing. Mm-hmm. The Klaviyo tutorials itself will teach you enough. Though obviously, like I mentioned, those little nitpick things to get you past that 20% mark, mm-hmm. that is something a course will definitely teach you. That is something that an experienced email marketer would definitely teach you. But as far as their tutorials, they're spot on. They're amazing. That's why they're beautiful. One thing that sort of a side note, sidetrack, I don't know if you saw any sort of news, but you know MailChimp was sold, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you know how much it was sold for?
I don't know how much.
It was, I believe, sold for 12 billion or 12.1 billion, six or 12 billion. I think so. The owner made an extra 6 billion, but I believe it was sold for $12 billion. But in essence, obviously MailChimp has been out for a lot longer, but in essence, looking at email or Klaviyo and email marketing, right? Mm-hmm. The last Q4, I think so, they generated well over $100 million. I remember seeing something regarding it, but well over $100 million in revenue from Klaviyo, right? So that just goes to show how early it basically is for this sort of platform, right? Yeah. And if I'm saying that it's already, you know, I've been using it for all of my clients, I don't recommend MailChimp. This just goes to show how good of a platform it is and how high of a valuation it'll have in the future. And who knows what else they'll have to offer. They're always releasing new things. I always try to join their live calls or their Q&As, because they always drop little gems and stuff. And obviously you want to go to the actual creators of the software if you want to get some insider information or something like that, right? That's something, for example, Facebook doesn't really do, or any of these softwares don't really do. And that's something that will definitely be worth it in the long run as far as learning key things about Klaviyo.
Absolutely. That's one thing I noticed too. They really care about like customer success. Yeah. You know, they're like, all right, if you're using our platform, we want you to succeed.
That's
Exactly.
awesome. And I like how you mentioned like keeping the text short in the emails, because it's the same thing for Facebook. Like I've seen people use like a whole lot of text where you have to click the see more, and then
Unbearable.
it's yeah. It, like, and it's not even a thing where I'm like, you know, like making this up. Like it's been split tested before, even for me when I used to freelance. I split tested longer text, shorter text. Shorter text wins 100% of the time. And
Makes sense.
engaging media too. I found out on Facebook that video performs better than single image most of the time. As granted, the video is engaging. Granted that it isn't like a minute long, you know. So,
Other variables and stuff, right?
exactly. But correct me if I'm wrong. This is just something I've observed. I've found that in email marketing, the call to action, the way it looks, what it says, how big it is, I feel like that has a bigger impact on converting, like, or getting the person to the landing page versus the Facebook ad. Because the Facebook ad, the call to action, you can
Yeah,
only
it's just it's
customize so
always
much.
So with obviously as far as customability or customizing the actual email aside from Facebook and their ad copies, there's a lot more customizations, right?
100%.
You can make it custom to your brand. You can make it represent exactly what your brand image is. That's why it's amazing, right? But if you go so far in terms of focusing on the content, you'll lose sight of the deliverability and what it's actually meant for, right? I've seen beautiful emails. Like I sign up to list like that. If I see a cool website on like whether it's an ad or anything like that, I see a really cool website, they have a beautiful image and everything like that, I'll go ahead and I'll subscribe to their list with my personal email just so I could see the type of emails they have. And it's a shame sometimes when I click on, or obviously I sign up to the list, I wait a few days, whatever, I'm just scrolling through my email, and it's a shame when I see these beautiful brands, right? I click on their email, but they're landing site promotions. But these emails look phenomenal. They look amazing. They're the greatest emails ever. They're far better than my emails visually. But the thing is, they're landing site promotions, right? And that may have to do with deliverability, of course. But then this is the real kicker. I click my spam box, and those same emails are landing inside my spam box, unfortunately.
Notice that too.
So, yeah, you never want to like. I know, for example, have you seen Hudson's Bay emails or like these department store emails? Right, they're extremely long. They're super long for no reason. I don't understand, but for them it works because they're already a known brand and they don't really care about that aspect too much. But if you're a local e-commerce store or something like that, there's no reason for you to have that long of an email template because no customer is going to truly stay engaged to that point, right? To a certain point, yes, that's true. If you have a couple products, but at the same time, if you have a bunch of text, just block word text, every single like image after image with block word text, it doesn't really matter. That email will not perform well over an email that has, really simple copy with a beautiful graphic that'll just take them directly to the CTA. And that CTA needs to be big, needs to be in their face. And consumers are stupid sometimes. Consumers are very stupid. So you can't have a small CTA and let them know like, we're having a discount. This is out. Sometimes you literally have to tell them buy now, but get this now. Click here. Those are one of the largest or best going CTAs that I've used, and it's directing them, right? You don't want them to be like, oh, hey, are you interested in our products as a CTA? It's something that consumers will basically shy away from because it's sort of a question. They're questioning themselves. Hey, do I want to check this out? No. If you give them a direct statement, buy now. Click here. Check this out. Then they're 100% I'm gonna go ahead and click, and then whatever is on the website, if it's appealing to them, they'll definitely purchase.
100%, yeah. And that's where the customization of the call to action and the email template in general is a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because, again, if you make it work, you're in the money, you're hitting the jackpot. But it's a curse at the same time because there are people, they might not know what they're doing. They'll mess something up, like you said, make the call to action really small, and then the consumer won't know. It's like, all right, I want to take part of this 10% offer, but or 10% off offer. But what do I do? The call to action is really smaller. It's like in a place where it's not obvious. So it's a blessing and a
Or
curse.
sometimes there's no call to actions at all. They put it within the images. I've seen, it's crazy. But
And then for Facebook, it's literally like at the ad level, you can just like it's just a drop down menu of like different ones. You can't even customize that much. It's yeah. But another similarity that I've like I said, like keeping it simple, because an example I like to give to everyone for the Facebook ads, at least, it's the same for emails. I'm like, look, people aren't on Facebook expecting to see your brand or an ad of your brand or a video or single image. So make it as simple as possible, just enough to catch their attention, see what it's about, and then hopefully convert. Same thing with emails. When someone checks their email, they're probably thinking, okay, I sent someone an email and I want them to get back to me, or I'm checking my work emails or like stuff that are important, right? They're not opening it thinking, oh,
this e-commerce brand that I signed up for their newsletter X amount of months ago, or I bought from them one time, I'm not expecting to see their email. So make it
exactly
simple.
Right. And that's where you make your leverage as a marketer. How am I going to make sure that these people are constantly going to be opening my emails, mm-hmm. not only opening them, staying engaged for the emails that are not so salesy, right? Because yeah. that's going to set you apart from a lot of marketers in today's age, right? What they'll do is, like, I've seen some stores send out a 10, 15, 20% discount almost every other day. That's going to for sure going to curate your list to the point where it's like they're only looking for these discounts, right? Mm-hmm. So when you eventually send them a thank you email or appreciation email, and your little subject line is we appreciate you or anything like that, and they click on it and they see there's no discount, there's no incentive for them to buy, they're mm-hmm. never going to look back on that brand, which is very unfortunate. And I used to do this very early on in my career as an email marketer. I would always send out these high incentives and stuff. And what the real kicker is, when it comes time to, for example, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, which is right around the corner, if you give them if you're used to giving them upwards of 25-30% of a discount, when you do that on Black Friday, Cyber Monday, it's nothing special to them. They've already received it from you, right? So that's where you really put yourself in a very bad situation as running the list, right? Yeah. So from the get-go, you can't go, and it's very hard to turn that around, right? You have to cut off the list to the very engaged people and the buyers and stuff. It's very difficult to turn around that large list from people that were engaged and doing really good to now people that are only looking for those incentives.
100%, yeah. You know, I appreciate you sharing that. And I'm sure there's a lot more to go into. Like I said, there's, you know, for the people listening, we're going to get into more email marketing best practices. And as well, I'll put in some like Facebook ad similarities more in the middle of the podcast. So if you're listening, don't worry, we'll get more into it. But, but moving on for the next thing, still comparing Facebook and email marketing. So a lot of people, you've seen this, people want to start an agency. First thing they think, oh, I want to start Facebook ads. Why do you think Facebook ads is such a go-to for new agency owners or agency owners in general? And why do people shy away from something like email marketing or even SEO? I don't see people running SEO or email marketing, but let's keep it email marketing because that's what you're into.
Yeah. So I'd say the number one thing is probably lack of knowledge or lack of, or there's no awareness that email marketing or running an email marketing agency is lucrative. They don't think that they could make good money from it. I feel like that's the number one thing, because when I tell people like I do email marketing and stuff, and then they're like, well, okay, how much do you make for your clients? And I tell them this month, and then they're like, well, how much do you make yourself? And then I'm like this, and they're like, it's very similar to Facebook ads in a sense, right? In terms of percentage rev shares, I know some people get paid a percentage of ad spend. That's how some agency do it as well. So when you look at that aspect, right, people are not aware of the fact that this agency or this new upcoming group of agencies in terms of email and SMS marketing, I always tell people check out SMS marketing because it's very easy to learn and very easy to set up, and it makes a shit ton of money as well. Mm-hmm. So I guess the number one thing would probably be lack of knowledge, as well as there's not a lot of email marketing like gurus out there in a sense. And I don't like the whole image of gurus, but I'm always 100% for someone to cut corners. I'm on myself. Like, if I wasn't able to cut corners by getting Splash's course, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't understand that, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at it, there's only probably maybe 3-4 people in this entire industry that are well known, that are certified for, you know, having a good course or good information regarding this topic. Right. But then if you look at ads agencies, the list goes on and on. There's so many, there's hundreds of people running, this is how to run your best Facebook agency in 2021. Like, so many people are out there, and it's almost basically now the new agency is telling people how to make their agency.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. So yeah,
Go ahead. I was going to say, like, all the biggest names, because they run Facebook ads for their agency, when someone types in like SMMA, social media marketing agency, or just agency 2021 or marketing agency, all you're seeing on YouTube is Facebook.
Exactly.
Happened to me too when I started. Probably same thing for you, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. Around that time, because that's when, so this is one thing that I realized, and it's something huge now. And I've been telling this to basically as much as people that are within my circle and stuff. Mm-hmm. If you want to get into like the online space or the agency space or anything like that, it's a lot easier than going off on your own. And like, for example, my brother, I've seen firsthand like the triumphs and the problems that you run into within drop shipping or running a store and stuff, there's plenty, right? So if you're someone that doesn't want to take that upfront risk or that sort of risk at all, when you're starting off, starting an agency is your best get go, but you can't have the mindset of basically, I need to make X amount or this much money and stuff, because I used to think like that. Yeah. And I realized I was always capped to a certain point when I thought like that. So your genuine interest needs to be, you need to help this other person make that money, right? Before you get your cut, right? And then ever since I switched over to that thinking, it's helped me a lot. But basically, back to what I was saying, when you're running an ad agency, it's very easy in the sense that you can set things up for people that need a service. Same thing with emails. But what I noticed in 2017 or 2016, everyone and their mother wanted to be a ad agency, or they want to set up an ad agency and stuff like that. But I'm starting to see that now with email marketing. There's a lot more email marketers popping up and stuff. I'm scrolling through Twitter and I'm seeing people tweeting about email marketing and tips and things like that. And I'm just like, well, I know this information, but it's like, how do you now I'm seeing all this information being recycled and stuff. And it's good, but at the same time, like ad agencies are one of the most toxic things to get into in this day and age, because there's so many of them. And I, like, in a sense, I don't want that to happen in email marketing, but obviously everything needs to have its turn, and it probably will get to that point. At least I could say, and my friends could say, we were pioneers in this, or we started years before this was actually a thing, right? And you will see that within the next year or so, a lot of, you know, email marketing will be the next thing. It'll be something that a lot of people are doing, right? And not saying that Facebook ads are going to be going away. They'll be going hand in hand, right? Now, I don't know. I probably don't know a single agency that solely runs Facebook ads without the interest of email marketing, because it's something that's so easy to set up, right? And so easy to upsell to your clients as well, right? But yeah, in the next year or so, I'm definitely going to be seeing an increase of email marketers and agencies and things like that, as well as people wanting to teach you email marketing. But the crazy thing is, those people that are going to be teaching you email marketing, they probably haven't been doing email marketing for a long time, right?
Yeah, I feel like the ones that are super into email marketing and that's their priority, they're not going to have time to like actually properly teach, right? Even like take Splash, for example. He'll like promote his course for a couple months and then he won't promote it for a long time. And then once he has time, or once like business is now, I don't know what constitutes him to like go back into it, then take time off. But basically, like, the time he's taking off, he'll say himself in a story, he's like, yeah, like my business grew so much when I'm focusing on this rather than trying to teach people the service.
Just cut out right there.
Apologies.
Yeah, you're back, bro. No, you're good.
Yeah, continue.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, for Splash, for example, like he'll go, he'll promote his course for a couple months, take a long break. And then he'll always say during that long break, he's like, oh, like my business grew so much because I was only focusing on this and not like the course. Every time my focus like deteriorates, my business takes a hit.
Exactly. That's very true. Right. So if your main focus is to sell a course, then your only focus can be to sell a course. Right. And obviously, like I've seen first, or he's spoken to me multiple times about people being unhappy and things like that, and anything along the lines of like, oh, I want a refund and stuff. And I've seen him literally just toss money back, refund. They've got the course, they got the information, but he just refunded them because he doesn't want that basic. I guess it's not so much guilt, but that saying as much as, oh, you know, it's not useful for me. It's been useful for like hundreds of other people. So it's just a matter of, you haven't been putting the time in, right?
Exactly.
But yeah, 100%. Like, for example, myself, I don't see I don't want to speak anything about the future just yet, but I don't see myself running a course for email marketing. It's just not something that I have in my plans, because 100%, if I'm putting my main focus into one thing, it'll deteriorate my other thing.
100%. Yeah. And going back to what you said about in the future, once a lot of people do email marketing, Facebook ads and email marketing, they're going to go hand in hand. I completely agree with that, because like I mentioned, people are doing partner integrations with like Zapier, for example, depending on like what type of business you're running, if you're running like a lead format, whatever it may be. And then there's other people as well. What's it called? Like you said, a lot of money can be made within the back end. So someone's running the Facebook ads for an e-commerce store and they're specializing for conversion campaigns, specializing in purchases. If those people don't convert, and obviously run the Facebook ads for the previous website visitors that didn't convert. But at the same time, a lot of these people, they probably initiated checkout, they put in their email. Those people you have in your list now, use that to your advantage. Correct. Do something in the back end. And even if you are a Facebook ads agency, just suggest that to your
leverage it, because it's in return, it's going to help a lot out with your ads as well, because you're collecting a lot more data, you're keeping a lot more data, and you're using that data, right? Exactly. It doesn't make sense. Like, you're paying for this customer's information, right? So what's the point of you not using that again? And in return, you say, for example, you pay X amount of money over the few months for you to run ads and everything like that, and you collect 10,000 emails, right? Yep. Those same emails, right, you can run any sort of ad campaign or any sort of campaign to those people, right? And you have that demographic, how old they are, all that information. You already have that because you paid money for it. And then you could just retarget that to those same people that were interested in that product. Or if you want to start up another store with the exact same niche, exact same everything, you can take those people, have that audience, and run it to that audience as well.
Exactly.
There's so many things that you could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know, like, someone's going to be thinking, oh, like, but I specialize in this, I don't want to offer this. What I got to say is, like, even if you don't want to do it yourself, get a referral partner, get someone, or like one of your friends or someone like in your network that does email marketing. Be like, hey, I have a client for you. Just give me like 10% of like the first month, or like a 5% recurring. Get a referral partner. Everyone wins at this point. You're getting your cut for referring. You're the person in your network or your friend, whatever they are, they have a new client, and your client, who is now both your clients, they're making the most money. And like,
exactly. And they're happy. They're happy at the end of the day. I noticed some of my longest clients that I've had for well over a year now, they're people that are close friends of mine. They're people that I do the most services for, that I've talked about like crypto and a bunch of things with, like so many different things are genuine ways for them to make money. I've spoken about those ventures the most with these people solely because they're interested individuals, and they're people that are willing to do whatever it takes to take, whether it's their store or their life, whatever it is, to the next level, right?
Yep.
And at the end of the day, right, if you're able to provide or even solely make the connection, both of those people, both of those sides are going to be grateful for you for making that connection.
Exactly, man. Spot on. But moving on to, we're getting back into more like best practices. But before we do that, what is the biggest mistake you see businesses do with their email marketing, or email marketers that have clients? What common mistakes or biggest mistakes do you see them do? This can be what you've seen, or like, let's say when you started out, there might've been stuff that you may have done incorrectly that you later on corrected. Just tell us a bit more about that, just so people can avoid those mistakes.
Yeah. So one of the huge things as far as running an email marketing agency goes is taking every single client that you can get your hands on, right? Mm-hmm. That's something that I've noticed and I've been burnt by like far too many times. And in some cases I'd have to like take legal action for things to be resolved. Right.
Wow.
And yeah, so I'll tell you this much. It is not easy to sue someone that lives in the States when you're 17, but it's possible. It's definitely possible. And there's definitely retribution for that, but pretty much definitely be very wary of the clients you take. I know starting off, it's very easy for you to be like, hey, I need to get as many clients as I can, but you realize I can't handle this. A one-man team, I can't handle this. And I'll share my experience in a bit that truly burnt me. And I would have been far more successful in this point right now if I didn't, if I just took a step back and realized that. But basically realizing that not every single person in this is friendly. Obviously, this is a very toxic industry that we're in. Not everyone is your friend. And at the end of the day, you need to really like, look close and dive into what your agency represents. Are you only in it for the money? Are you only in it for making your clients money? Are you only in it solely because it's something that'll gateway you into e-commerce or something other venture, right? Mm-hmm. You need to realize what your realistic outlooks are for this agency. And once you align that, you'll find your ideal client, whether it's someone that's making X amount per month and they're genuinely interested and they'll give you good feedback as well as provide you with whatever you need to have that successful email or SMS backend, right? But based off personal experiences, I did that, right? So in around September and October leading upwards of Q4, right? I got up to 10, 11 clients, and I've never had that many clients before, right? I had jumped from literally having maybe 5 clients to 10 clients within a span of a few weeks. So wow. So it was definitely a lot, because, and I'm realizing right now, because almost every other day or every at least 2 to 3 times per week, I get people, or I get my friends messaging me, hey, I have this guy, he needs email marketing and stuff. And if he's not past a certain threshold, I can't take him on because it'll screw with my team's ability to finish things and get things done on time, right? But basically, back to what I was saying, last year, prior to Q4, I got this sudden influx of clients, and they weren't low quality clients. They have very high quality clients doing multiple six figures per month and stuff. And pretty much what happened was I couldn't handle creating 3 graphics within the week to send out for these 10 stores. So that would mean I'd have to create 30 graphics within a week, schedule them, create the copies for these graphics, do all the work by myself, and then schedule them out within 24 hours of each time when my client wants me to get something done. It's just, it's inhumane. It's too much. And I realized that. So unfortunately, actually, I was able to get it done. I was able to make it past basically Q4, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, just to push it right to the end. But I was mentally exhausted. I was so tired to the point where I didn't, I remember I didn't ask for my client's payment for like close to a week after, because I just needed a break from everything, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, that's when things sort of crashed. That's when for that entire week, I wasn't doing the work, right? And I didn't switch things back from Black Friday, Cyber Monday back to regular store. Clients would get, you know, upset. They'd get annoyed by things. They'd be like, oh, it doesn't make sense for me to pay you this percentage per month if you're, you know, you're only doing this much and stuff. And they'd undermine the value of your actual work, right? Mm-hmm. And I realized, well, these were the wrong clients I got into bed with, right? These are the wrong people I should be working with, right? And long story short, problems happened, contracts were breached. Payments weren't given out, a bunch of crazy things. And now I had to divert my focus to those people and taking legal action, doing things like that. And my business went away. And Brandon, he's one of the, I don't know if you know Brandon Villar. He even told me when I spoke to him about this, and he was like, listen, bro, it's better if you just have the peace of mind and forget about this and focus more on your agency, because you'll make that back so much more. Yeah. I didn't listen to that. I pursued that. And for about 2 months, by the time everything finished, I realized I was far less than I should have been, assuming that I was doing good and I didn't run into those problems. Yeah. So 2 main takeaways is definitely knowing when to hire out and not being greedy, because those are the things that burn me the most, because that was the first point where I crossed my 10K mark, right? And I wanted to hold that, and I didn't want to pay an extra grand or two to get employees or team members. Now I've successfully about 5, close to 6 on and off employees, but some of 5 people helping me out and stuff. And everything just works in unison. Yeah, I'm paying X amount and stuff per month, but you know, this is one thing that Splash taught me or told me about. Would you rather keep 80% of 100,000 or 100% of 50,000, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of those things that really basically gave me the push to hire out a team, realize the quality of clients that I get needs to be to my standards, and overall I can't be just looking for where the money is and how big a certain client is, right? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, those clients can screw you over just like that.
100%. I really appreciate you sharing all of that. Like that is a lot to share. Yeah. I know it, because that's like, I want to say that's the side that a lot of people, especially getting into,
don't talk about.
Like people say, like people see, oh my god, I'm gonna make X amount of dollars in X amount of days or months, or oh, I want to get as many clients as possible. And it's like firsthand, like people listening, they should realize is there's such thing as scaling too much or too fast, I should say.
Exactly.
You need the systems in place. And I've spoken to people with like 20 plus clients, and they say like, you need like some next level systems in order to like handle it and not like eventually just crumble down, you know?
Yeah. Right now I'm at that, like I'd say I'm at a good comfortable rate because I have employees and people who help me out and stuff. But right now we're at like 30 stores and 22 of them are active, right? And over the last, well, that's what I was talking about like a month ago with Splash. But like now I'm at the point where, and I don't like saying this and stuff, purely because it sounds weird and stuff, but it gets to a point where like you lose track of how much clients you have. You're getting the work done, but you lose track of how many clients you have, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not the type of agency that people should have, and nor is that something that is going to be sustainable. But it's good for a small amount of time, because so long as you have the system and you can handle it, right? For example, if I was doing this by myself, I would crumble. I'd be finished. 22 clients, I wouldn't be able to handle that, right? But I have a team to handle that, right? And we get things done. We have calendars in place. Everyone knows everything. We have multiple calls per week and it's very organized, right? Can there be a system that's further than that? 100%. I know a clue, like for example, my close friends that are also doing email marketing, they have systems far better than mine. And I've seen them firsthand and I'm completely shook because I'm like, I thought to get to this point, I was like, wow, this is amazing for me to have this system. But then I look at their systems and it's like, they have like 15 employees and stuff. They're all working in unison. Like it's like a little ant colony. Like everyone is handing things Sick. Around. It's amazing. Yeah. But definitely excited. And that comes as you're willing to take the risk, right? Because mm-hmm. they're investing so much into their teams, a fraction of what I'm investing into my team, right? And as I invest into my team more, that's the way that I'll increase in terms of revenue, in terms of actual profit and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this goes for like, it doesn't just go for an email agency. Like literally
No, it goes for every agency.
Any service-based business, this applies. Yeah. Like even for me, back when I ran my online coaching, like personal training,
yeah,
this also would have applied. Like there was going to be a point, like I remember I came crashing down pretty like, cause I started, I got my first client, I think it was December 2019, January 2020. And then, as you know, the pandemic hit like North America around March. Yeah. But at that time, I remember I went from like one client to two to three. I think I was handing like anywhere from like four to six clients.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. It was pretty good for like a 2 month thing, but then you got to, and I had like, my calendar was like filling up with more meetings and like,
right.
Looking back, I'm like, all right, even though the pandemic kind of like effed me up in a sense.
Yeah.
The fact that I wasn't even like looking to hire, like I was thinking, oh, let me reinvest this money into like Facebook ads and marketing to get even more clients. And then looking back, I'm like, damn, without like a proper team behind me or proper systems, I would have came down crumbling anyway. The pandemic just kind of.
But one thing from that, it's definitely some, those skills that you've learned over the last year and so. Now, if you ever want in future reference, if you ever want to start that up again, you already have the knowledge to do so.
Exactly.
Right. And on top of that, you know how to correctly build up a system because of the sheer connections you've been building over the last year. And lastly, with the experiences that you, for example, you work with an agency right now, or you do things like that right now, you can directly translate those things over to your new business. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what I noticed as well. And a lot of my friends that have agencies as well, they tried doing it a year ago and stuff. It didn't work out for them solely because they didn't have the information they have today. And now they're doing that. Now they understand systems. Now they understand, I need to run these type of ads. Now they understand I need to, this is how I should acquire clients. This is how I should talk to people. A lot of people don't know how to talk to people at the end of the day. I didn't know how to talk to people when I started off, but that's where like, when a lot of people, like people hate sales, but like sales is what teaches you how to talk to people, honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really like the fact you mentioned like, oh, I had friends that tried it a year ago, didn't work. Then they tried it. Now it starts working. One thing I realized too, like when I first started, like 19-year-old guy, like this is still older than you are right now, which is like still crazy. The fact that you're 18 doing amazing, bro. Like so sick. Yeah. But
thank you.
Of course. I was going to say like 19, I'm 22 now. So relatively younger than I am now, 19-year-old kid. And this is like late 2018, this is when like the Facebook ad agency SMA, this just started popping off, right?
Right.
There wasn't many of us, but they were coming out. And like, I remember like just walking into like a local business or talking to like a local realtor and just demanding 1K a month, 15K or not 15K, 1.5K a month without any like track record. I'm like, man, I'm looking these days, I'm like, I should have done some sort of like rev share deal at least or like, oh man, like that's
and
the
it's bro, there's so many unisons with what we used to do and stuff. I used to do that as well, even with my email agency, like because I was like, we should do a 2K onboarding fee and then a like a 20% rev share. No one in their right mind would do that if I don't have the proof to back it, right?
Exactly.
I would be there with and actually I'm gonna be very honest at this point, I'd be there with like no results and stuff, and I'd ask friends of mine to send me their results. And that's how I sort of, that was actually how I was able to get my first client. That's something I actually never told anyone. Yeah. But now, like, if anyone asks for results, bro, I'll go on call you. I'll record it. I'll reload everything. I'll show them everything. Like, this, all the stuff I do is definitely real. It's legitimate. I make sure to do that. You know, like, at any given moment, if I ask any one of my clients for a testimonial, which I will be doing shortly, because I've plans to make a website, they'll be willing to give their testimonial just like that, right? And that's the type of relationship I built with my clients. But like, looking back, man, I completely understand. It's just like, it's unrealistic goals, and there's a certain point where that can get you until you realize, all right, I need to switch my mindset.
100%. Yeah, like for me, for instance, that late 2018, I was the guy demanding like 1K a month, 2K per month, right? And it never worked. And then early 2019, like, I had a like kind of slow period where I was like, okay, like, that's when I also discovered trading and stuff, which is like, to this day, what I'm still pursuing, which I'm super grateful for. But still, at the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, like, I've got this agency course for 1K US, let me make the most of it. But I got to change my approach. I started charging anywhere from like $300 to $500 US. That's when the clients started coming in, especially for like a guy that never, like, you know, never really did much, right? Like, you got to start low ticket, build your way up. And
exactly,
I didn't even have this written down. I actually like thought of this, just like while we were speaking, like, just to set expectations. Cause a lot of, I guess you can say, gurus or people that sell courses, they're like, oh, get to six figures in 30 days or six figures in 90 days. Like, I used to believe that. I know a lot of people believe that. Can you like just reiterate how like that's unrealistic and some actual realistic expectations to set?
Yeah. So I used to do that as well, in the sense, I remember I was starting off, I used to do that when I was doing with SMA and stuff. I would say, all right, I'm going to get to, because the thing I'll tell you, the course I joined was 30-day SMMA.
Yeah.
Right. So within 30 days, you know, you have to get to a certain point and make this much and stuff. They'd force that and stuff, but it's all an illusion. It's not ever real. No one ever got to that point within, from literally dead broker, zero knowledge of what the skill is within 30 days of learning. They've been doing it far before that for them to get that. It's a really good story to talk about, but it's in all reality, you can't teach someone a skill and within 30 days they'll be successful like that. There probably are stories like that, but that's just shy of luck. No average person, you can't do that. Out of 100 people, not even one person would be able to do that. But for me, I realized, and this is why every single, if this is one thing I say, when you're looking to get any sort of I'd say mentorship, right? I realized after my first investment with that low SMA course, was not to get a course, get a mentorship, someone that's actually going to teach you knowledge and their experience on the past. Right. So with Perichik and Jordan, both of those guys, I learned their past knowledge, and they taught me both of them taught the exact same thing, having a proper attitude and mindset to what you want to achieve, what you actually want to do. Because it's unrealistic for you to say, well, I'm making $1,000 per month, I want to make 20K next month with no action, no plan.
Yeah.
If you really want that to happen, you need to have a plan that goes to that. But setting more realistic goals, all right, I'm at 1K right now, I can get up to 5K if I just get two clients to pay me 2K per month. That's realistic, right?
Yeah.
And it just comes down to having like, what's your eventual outlook is like a year from now? Because I know how you do it for yourself, but I have a goal of what I want to be, where I want to be in terms of financially, mentally, team, like business, like everything's like that. Yeah. I have a goal of where I want to be by the end of the year. Then I also have one where I want to be exactly by the end of 2022. Then I have a goal where I want to be 3 years from now, and then one from 5 years from now, and then from there. And as I go on, for example, my goals from a year ago, from the beginning of August, I'd say August 2020 to the end of the year, my goal was to have X amount in my bank account. And it was a very attainable amount comparing exactly how much I was doing per month, right? And I basically broke that goal, and I made some, like, probably 20% more, and I had that, right? So now I had already realized that, and I realized that basically I've set this attainable goal, this thing that's actually going to work. Let me do it again. So I set a goal before my 18th birthday. I want to, or by the age of 18, I want to make this much, right? Mm-hmm. And I was able to attain that goal mainly because it was something that was within my reach. If I was making 1-2K per month, it wouldn't be within my reach, right? So it's just looking back at yourself and realizing, what is it that's going to get me to that point, and how am I going to do it? You can have like crazy goals and stuff, but you have to have an even crazier plan.
Yeah, I love that, especially that last part. You can have crazy goals, but you got to have a crazy plan. You know, if you're just doing like the average, oh, X amount of outreach a day with X amount of cold calls or X amount of cold emails, that's going to get you results, but the results you're looking for, probably not, at least right away.
Right away, definitely not.
Yeah, because people are like, oh, I want to get to like 10K per month. I'm like, all right, well, what you're doing right now with like the basic outreach, you're going to get to like one, two, three. Exactly. Yeah. But if you want to scale past that, you got to start leveraging, you know, reinvesting into the business, start like hiring eventually, scaling properly, systems. There's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of things that like these gurus like don't tell you, you know, because they want to make
anyone that like claims themselves as a guru, stay away from them, 100% stay away from them, because their only source of living isn't the thing that they're teaching you, but it's what they're selling you. The course, whatever it is, the mentorship. Exactly.
Yeah. And it, this doesn't mean like course sellers are all course sellers are bad, right? Like,
no, exactly. If it wasn't for a course, I wouldn't be at this point. But it's just, you have to be wary of the people that you're looking for when it comes to it, right? It's like a car, right? Mm-hmm. You're looking to buy a nice used car, right? You're not going to, just because one's cheaper than the other, it doesn't mean it has a good maintenance record. Like it has problems to it, everlasting problems, right? If I see a course that's 1,000 and a course that's 5,000, what's the difference between the two? Yeah, one might be 1,000, but it's not giving me any information. And it made like 2-3 people successful, but then you're looking at a course that's 5,000 and that has made every single one of those people successful, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's something that's going to be within the, or within Splash's course as well. Like he has the base 1,000 or I don't know how much he's selling it for now, but the normal course, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have the inner circle, right? And that's something that without the inner circle, I wouldn't be able to get to the point I am today or get past that 5 figures per month.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of people in that inner circle that like are killing it right now. Like, I don't
know. Every single one.
Were you there when Amar was there? Amar is one of my closer friends.
Amar. No. That was like the experimental group. I remember that. I wasn't even in a thing. His agency or his course for that around that time. Of the people that I was with was Brandon, Aiden, Shamika. And I believe that was it.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I know who Brandon is. I've seen him on like Splash's page. I've heard like good things about him. Everyone else haven't heard from, but like, obviously, like you said, everyone that's been in that ends up succeeding. So
yeah, 100%.
That's awesome. And one more thing, like I want to end off this, like before we move on to the next question, mm-hmm. this part of the segment, like people should not be afraid of free work or like doing free work.
No.
That's so, one thing I tried avoiding.
That's something I completely missed out by talking. There would be clients. My very first client that paid me, the first week that I did work for him, that he made money from himself, he didn't pay me. He didn't do any sort of upfront stuff. I told him within the first week, let me hop on your store, set things up. If you don't make any money from the things that I set up, then we'll cut ties. Oh, no, I said, if you don't surpass $500 in sales from the flows that I set up, then we can cut ties and you can keep the flows. You can keep the work that I did for you. You can keep it. So obviously with the bet like that, there's nothing lost for him, right? So they take you up on that. But obviously, you know, you have to be confident in your ability at that point, right? Mm-hmm. When you make a bet on yourself, all right, yeah, so let me do the work for you. Once it exceeds that point, talk to him and be like, hey, listen, I did this for free, right? I can do a lot more for you as well. And that's when they really start gaining your trust, right? So free work is not a bad thing at all, especially when you're starting off with no sort of like recommendations or no sort of testimonials or any sort of past work. Free work is the best way to get your foot in the door.
Absolutely. And like, if you're someone who's like super anal and they're like, oh, I have to like be paid for my time. I remember what Jordan suggested. I think this was like mid 2019 or something. He said, he's like, all right, offer a low ticket, low commitment service, like posting content a few times a week. Once that's doing well and they know who you are and build trust, then you offer
upsell with ads and everything. Exactly. Yep. Yep. I remember that's what the whole content agency was. That was we would post for them. They would pay us $200 per month and then we'd upsell them on ads. And that's how I was able to get my first like $2,000-$3,000 check because I upsold them on ads.
Yeah, like either of those things, they definitely would have worked better than what I did. Was like brand new, straight out the door. Hey, I'll do this for $1,000 a month. Oh, you have proof? Not really, but I got mentored by this guy. Yeah, it doesn't work, but
yeah.
Yeah, moving on to the, so we're kind of going back to like the email marketing best practices. I know you mentioned, like, you know, keeping the text short, making the creative really good, making sure you have a good call to action. Is there anything that you may have missed that you want to mention now? Or if there's anything you have mentioned, if you want to dive deeper into it, and obviously I can start like bouncing off it and relating it to Facebook ads as well.
So one thing that I probably left out was split testing. You know, the first thing that you create, the first thing that you create is never going to be the thing that's going to be there forever, right? Mm. So you always have to constantly split test. No one, whether it's a campaign or a subject line or graphic design or whatever it is, those things, they have to be interchangeable. There's never one thing that, like, I can't name you a single time that I've done something on a client store and I've kept that the same since the beginning that we've started. It always has to change because it can always do better, right? If we do some, if that email is getting an open rate of 20, 25%, then it can definitely get to 30%. It can definitely get to 40%. Mm-hmm. It can definitely get to 50%, right? And with that sort of mindset, right, there's no way you could possibly lose so long as you're willing to put the work in. It's a lot more, like, it's very easy. I'm not even going to joke. It's very easy for any person to hop on Klaviyo's, you know, sort of like teaching channels. Yeah. They watch a few videos, set up a bunch of flows, get up to 20% in revenue. It's very easy to get up to that point. Mm-hmm. But then anything past that, that's where your skills are tested. That's where even getting to 25% is difficult, where even getting to 30, 40%, that's like very extreme, right? And holding that as your client scales as well is as difficult as well.
100%, yeah. Split testing is huge, even for Facebook ads. Like, a lot of people
be like, I know for split testing, and if you don't know, like, you'll be completely lucky if you have an ad that performs for a shot. There's definitely a lot of variables to that.
100%, yeah. Or like, people will be like, okay, I'm ready to run my conversions campaign or my traffic campaign. I don't know which creative to use. I just tell them, like, yo, try both.
Split.
Put a small percentage of your budget into them. Whichever one performs best, double down on it. And like, I like how you said a lot of people can like just watch the Klaviyo teachings, hop in, really easy user interface, by the way. I've used it before. Very, it's so easy.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you can get to like 15, 20% a month, even for Facebook. Like, you can easily break even on your Facebook ads. Like, you can get a ROAS of one or like 1.25 upwards, even 1.5. Yeah.
So long as you have, like, obviously if the product is good or whatever you're selling is good, you're giving it to the right audience, right? Then that 100% you can do good with it. But how are you going to get to that, you know, four or five ROAS or that return and stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I feel exactly like anyone can break even or make a little bit of profit, but can not everyone can double, triple, quadruple, or even 5x their money consistently. Obviously, if you're running like if you're running an offer or like a really good product and you want to put that out there, then it can do well. But are you reworking your funnel? Are you making sure your audiences are up to date and up to par? Because a lot of people, they'll reuse the same audience over and over, and then like
get burnt out.
Like, a lot of people, it'll work for a while and then it'll just stop working. They're like, oh, what do I do? It's like, rework your funnel, get new data,
exactly,
use something new. You got to switch it up, especially like, this is kind of a sidetrack. I know this podcast about email marketing, but a lot of, for any of your clients that like do Facebook ads on top of the email marketing, a lot of people, they don't even like, they know about the iOS 14 update, but they're like, oh, like, they start complaining about it. It's like, oh, sales have taken a hit, blah, blah, blah. You go into their events manager, it's like, dude, you don't even have conversions API set up.
Bro, that's one of the huge things. And whether it's like, I believe there, I was just on a client call with one of my longest lasting clients today. And they were talking about like iOS 15 and stuff as well. And iOS 15 for email marketing screwed up a lot of shit as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things in terms of your abandoned cart. Now with iOS 15, you're able to, if you're ordering something, you're able to sign up with a fake email or Apple generated email.
No way.
And so basically what it does is you can use that fake email, but it masks your real email. So you'll, whatever campaigns or whatever, like order updates or everything like that, that you actually apply for, like, say, for example, I'm a customer, I want to buy this t-shirt, right? So what I'll do is I'll put in that my email, or basically whatever my email is, umarshake@gmail.com, let's call it that, right? But in their eyes, what iOS 15 does now is they're able to give a fake email, whatever, random at appleid.com. And what these promotions that we're sending out, it'll go to that fake email, or that abandoned cart email will go to that fake email, but you'll receive it within your actual genuine email, right? So you have the contact of that fake email, but it's, you don't have the real contact, which is one thing that's I guess, the scariest thing, a part of this update. But that just goes to show, you know, that test how good of a marketer you are. There's a lot of ways to work around that now. Exactly. You have to constantly be cleaning out your list, engaging your list, because you can have now like thousands of emails literally at your hand for you to just toss, and they're all fake emails. That's the way iOS 15 does it, right? So there's a lot of things, and it's how willing are you to be knowledgeable about the new things come out? Are you going to keep on doing things the old way that, you know, everyone else used to do and stuff? Or are you going to convert? Are you going to change as time changes as well? And that goes with any industry, mm-hmm. right? If you stay in that industry long enough, you will see the change, right? Nothing will ever stay the same.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's like a really good way to kind of top off the best practices, whether you're doing emails, Facebook, SEO, whatever you're doing. Are you staying top of mind? Are you adapting? That's kind of being, right. That's the biggest thing about being a marketer or anything really. Are you adapting all the time? Right. Like keeping up to date, like for the Facebook ads, like, are you implementing that conversions API, taking data from the server side, or are you still depending on the same old pixel that a lot of people are now opting out of? So
yeah,
it's the 100%. Same thing. Same thing with the emails. There's going to be ways to obviously override it, but it all comes down to like how good of a marketer are you.
Exactly. 100%.
Awesome, man. So moving on with the podcast, we are almost done here with the main segment. I want to talk about niching down. And I know you told me in private, even like before the podcast and in the DMs mm-hmm. when we were setting this up, you were saying that you're finally about to like niche down into more of streetwear stores, right? 100%, you want to talk a bit more about your experience with niching down and like how that's going and what made you decide, okay, I've made this much per month being a generalist. Now I want to be a specialist and kind of scale up. You want to kind of exactly. give some insight?
So in any sort of industry or I guess whether it's ad agency or email marketing stuff, and this is what a lot of my friends are realizing right now, mm-hmm. niching down is probably the greatest way for you to be in the game for the longest, right? Because mm-hmm. you can be a general store email. So starting off this, it's crazy how like within a short amount of time, within a year, how things have changed. Because starting off, I used to take general stores, general dropshipping stores. Now, for the life of me, I can't find a single person running a general dropshipping store, right?
Yeah.
And that converted over to people that were running normal brands and stuff. And I would work with those people. I still do work with those people, right? Mm-hmm. But now, ever since I've done a few partnerships, so now I'm partnered with a streetwear hub. They're called Advanced Space. Really cool guy that runs it. He has the same vision as I do. And I also work very closely with a streetwear agency. They strictly do streetwear clients. They do ads, SEO, Snap, TikToks, everything. Even white labeling content and stuff, right? So what I basically did is I connected, I obviously introduced the two. It's really cool because Adam, that's the guy that runs the agency. Mm-hmm. He flew out to Salt Lake City to meet the other guy. And they literally, like, within a day of me connecting the two, he flew out, he met him, they started talking. And mind you, he lives in San Diego, so it was like a genuine flight, yeah. And he met the two, and he would just say, they're just talking and stuff. And then the owner of the hub basically calls me, and he's telling me, and he's just like, this is something that is going to be an amazing future for all of us, right? This is something that's definitely going to be there. Because one thing that I realized specifically about streetwear is everyone wants a streetwear business. Everyone wants to start a clothing business or something like that. Yeah. And streetwear is the easiest way for you to build a cult-like following. The quicker you can get a cult-like following, the easier it is for you to market yourself and actually sell your stuff, right? Right. If you look at any normal clothing brand, right, it's they have the average consumer. But then if you look at a streetwear brand, they'll have consumers that are typically younger. But every single drop you have, they're buying from that. They're showing love. They're doing everything because they genuinely love your image, right? And then now niching down to specifically streetwear compared to normal store, I get to leverage those customers, those people that have signed up to a list. Mm-hmm. And I see 40, 50% just coming in from their back end. The first time ever, I was able to get 75, almost 80% of someone's backing solely from email and SMS. That was the first time ever. And that was done on a streetwear brand. Mm-hmm. And now I'm realizing it's very easy to get them basically get anywhere from 30 to 40% of the backing coming in for these streetwear stores, because all of these customers are cult like followers. They like the brand. They're genuinely there for the image, right? Mm-hmm. So niching down not only gives you the opportunity to take advantage of what that niche has to offer, but it also gives you the most important thing in my eyes is that reputation. Because the moment that I announce that I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be announcing it soon once I create my website and everything, and I have the proof to back it because I have X amount of clients that are in streetwear, I'm working with these big names and stuff, right? If I have the proof to back that, I'm going to be the only rivaling email marketer within the streetwear niche. And no, there will be hundreds of other email marketers, but then there's going to be thousands of stores that are streetwear stores that need email marketing, but then they're going to see me and they're going to be like, I obviously want to go with this person because he is specialized in this field, right? These people are all email marketers, but they're not specialized in this. He's niching down and he's specialized. Will there be clients that I'd obviously want to work with that are outside of streetwear if they're doing X amount? 100%, I wouldn't pass up on that offer. That doesn't mean my experience as a normal email marketer goes away. If anything, it amplifies even more solely because I'm working with these high level individuals that I'm only going to work with if they're at a certain level.
Right.
Or I'll work with these low level individuals, but they have to be within my niche, right? So that's what it comes down to. Niching down gives you a much better reputation when it comes to the actual game itself, right? You're not only an email marketer, you're not only an agency, you're not only this, but you're solely an agency for this niche, right? Whether that's you know, food brands or fashion brands only, things like that. I actually know a person that strictly runs agent or runs ads for fashion brands, right? That's like makeup and like things like that. Sorry, cosmetics, not fashion. Yeah. So you have to just niche yourself down. And honestly, I love streetwear. I really do. It's such a like adaptive culture. There's always people like releasing new cool things that I'm just like, I'm not someone that is going to forego and, you know, have like the whole grill look with like the Air Forces and the off-white, everything like that.
Yeah.
But I love the culture behind it. And that's something that if you can have something that represents like the people, and that's something that's never going to die out because the people are going to keep on going, right? You look at a lot of these like big name, like any sort of like Armani, any sort of these like big name people have been around for like 40, 50 years. They're now working with these streetwear people. You look at Kanye and stuff, they're doing things directly in streetwear. So if you look at it 5 years from now, 6 years from now, where is that really going to be? You look at Supreme, brand like Supreme literally sold for, I believe, $2.1 billion a few months ago, or I think so close to a year ago. So where do you think other brands that are starting up now will be X amount of years from now? So you have to look at something, grab onto it and roll with it, basically catch onto the trend, right? Yeah, it'll be scary to the point where, you know, what if there's a client that wants to do work with you and they're like, well, you're only a streetwear thing, and they would shy away from that because they think that you're only knowledgeable in this aspect. But it's your job to let them know that you cover all aspects, but your main focus is streetwear because that's where you see a sudden need or a sudden urge of email marketers that are currently being lacked, right? I don't know a single person that's running has more clients that are in streetwear compared to me, right? All of my friends that are doing email marketing, all of them have clients in different niches, whether it's home decor or anything like that. They all run things in different niches. So for me, it's like I sort of have to do this in the sense that no one else is, right? And if I can put my foot down in this sort of niche or this category, then no one else is going to be able to rival with me. And it's a win-win for me, it's a win-win for my clients, and it's a win-win for any person that's interested in coming into the streetwear and want to learn about email marketing, because I'm the only person that can provide that information.
100%. That was a really, really good explanation. I love that. And like niching down, it can benefit literally anybody as long as you do whatever you're doing generally long enough. Like for me,
exactly,
I sold workout programs, right? And it was just like one-off programs, one-off nutrition plans. And I did it to anyone that hit me up. And obviously, like I made pretty good money that summer, right? And then I came to a point, I was like, all right, I can't be doing one-off products anymore. It has to be something recurring. And two, I need to niche down now that I have the credibility, now that I have kind of reputation as someone who brings results for people. Let me niche down. And then it came to a point where I was like, all right, I'm only going to work with entrepreneurs and full-time workers, because these are the people that, one, they're going to take the stuff seriously. I'm not saying people outside of this realm didn't take it seriously, but that's what I saw a common trend with. And two, with the service I was offering at the time, which was fitness as well as sleep, they're going to be benefiting the most out of it. And like once that happened, like, dude, income shot up. People think like, oh, I'm going to be losing money. It's like, look, it's short-term loss for longer-term gain.
Exactly.
In the moment, you may be turning someone down. Like, I've turned people down before. I'll be like, look, to be honest, like, I just don't think we're a good fit. And that's nothing personal against you. I just have a certain criteria. And I just don't think you're going to get the most out of the program, no matter how much you pay me. And then, so obviously in the moment, I'm turning them down. And then, but a couple of days later, a couple of weeks, you have a sales call with someone who does meet your criteria. They become a customer. And then there you go.
That's where it goes from there. Exactly. And at the end of the day, like, if you don't have the discipline to sort of, and the reason I say discipline, because it's very easy for you to say yes to someone that's willing, that wants your service. It's very easy, but it's very difficult for you to say no for someone that's literally telling you, hey, I want this, but you're just, you're doing the best possible thing for not only yourself, but for them as well, because there's something out there that's for you, but I can't provide that for you. What I provide is for this person, right? So respectfully, like, I don't want to waste my time on what I'm currently doing for you. And I don't want you to waste your money on me. It's just basically at the end of the day, it's not a perfect fit. I'm not saying in the future or down the line, I might have something else that, that, you know, can help you out, or something else that you completely change the way you are that can help me out. Right. It just comes down to realistically, what's your ideal consumer and how is it that you guys are going to work together? Right.
Exactly. And for people that are at that point where they want to niche down, but they don't know how to go about it, what do you kind of recommend? Like, do you recommend they, what's it called? Do they go with like whatever they're passionate about? Do they go with what would be the most profitable in that moment? Do they go with, take a look at their current client list? What are most of them, what space are most of them in? And do they just double down on that? How do you recommend someone goes about it?
So I'd say it would be a mix of the first one and third one. So obviously passion is a huge factor with my thing. I've been following Streetwear for a while, and it's one of those things that I see once in a while and I'm like, no one else is doing this. That's why I'm very drawn to it. If someone else was doing it, then I wouldn't be so drawn to it. Then another thing is, well, before I made the decision to basically niche down to as a streetwear agency, I sort of realized, like, okay, I have this many clients that are this people and this many clients are this people, but I'm doing far more better work. And I genuinely, like, even though it's work, I genuinely enjoy doing the work because my creative spectrum goes up a lot more when I'm working at streetwear agencies because they have this sort of, I guess, vibe to them, or this sort of brand image to them where no one else has this. And it's like, oh, I can do, I have an idea really cool for this graphic, and I show it to them and they're like, bro, this is amazing. I didn't think that it would be this cool. And so, but then I go ahead and I do it for my normal customer and stuff, and it looks, they obviously love it and stuff. And that's what my job is, to make sure they love it before we send it out. But then it's like, when I look at it and I compare it to this, it's just not there in terms of creative spectrum.
Absolutely. Awesome, man. So, we're pretty much like, almost done with the podcast at this point. There's one more general question about email marketing, and then we're going to get into like your goals for the future and some quick fire questions. But to end off the segment of the podcast before going into more specific personal questions, I know you've already kind of like laid out little like tidbits here and there, such as like, don't scale too quickly, do free work if you have to, all this good stuff. Do you have any other additional tips for a beginner? Someone's brand new. They're like, all right, I want to run an agency, more specifically in email marketing, and I need some sort of tip to like just take with me to make sure that I'm constantly practicing it. What would you leave for people?
For the first or next 30 days, solely focus on what your goal is for that 30 days. Mm-hmm. So when I first started off, what I realized is, all right, I need to make money, right? So that was my goal. I need to make X amount. So my realistic goal was 2K for my first client, 2K, because I saw a lot of people within the group getting 2K from their first clients and or from their recurring clients, whatever. And a lot of people that I realized that were doing that, they're doing the same thing that everyone else was doing. So that person that was getting that 2K, they're doing the same thing. So I'm like, well, if they're doing it, why can't I? Right. So for the my plan was to do it for the next 30 days straight. But for the first 15 days, I sent out 100 DMs and I sent out 50 emails to different brands every single day. I had it on a check pad. I had to make sure I did it. If I didn't do it, then I would double down on the next day, or I do whatever I can, but I would make sure to get that 150 per day. And it only took me about 15 days or close to 2 weeks for me to get my first client. But if it took me the full month, then it would take me the full month. Mm-hmm. So it's starting off, you need to have goals every single day of what you need to get done. Even today, every single night, because realistically anyone can set aside if you can't set aside 5-10 minutes every single night to plan out what you want to do the next day, you will spend hours next day figuring out what it is I should do next, right? Mm-hmm. If you have no outline for your day, you're going to be struggling for what you have to do, right?
Yeah.
So having a clear outline every single day of what you have to do to reach your attainable goal, that's the number one thing that you should do or focus on. And that's for whatever agency or whatever thing you want to start. But primarily for email marketing, it's don't get you're going to get a lot of no's. So yeah. Don't get too discouraged by the no's, because I got a handful of no's, and you're going to get a lot of people wasting your time as well. Because I get on multiple calls. Those people will be speaking to you multiple times throughout the weeks. And then when it's right around time for them to sign the contract and get started, they ghost you, right?
Yeah.
So that's time wasted. That's time that you're frustrated. That's time that you've already imagined, oh, I can make this much money for this person. I'll get this cut, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's going to burn you. And one little tidbit, once you get to a certain point and you're making money for clients and stuff, and so this is sort of like a financial thing, don't spend money until you actually collected it.
Yeah.
So well, that was a huge thing for me, because I would have clients I count every single day, and this is when I was obsessed with it and stuff. Now I don't even look at it until the end of the month. Mm-hmm. I would see how much my clients did in revenue, and then I'd see how much I generated for them, and then I'd calculate my percentage. I'm like, all right, cool, I made this much today and stuff. And it's really good, but it's just like it gets consuming, and it's just sort of childish out of it. so definitely, like, you know, Have your main goals aligned, and just don't worry about it. Just you have your goals in place. You have what you want to reach or what you need to do to get to that point. So just don't be too worried. You'll get to that point so long as you stayed focused, right? And mm-hmm. if it's not meant to be, then I'm Muslim. I'm very faithful in that aspect. If something is genuinely not meant to be, then it's not meant to be, right? If you're trying and you're putting all the time that you can, and you've been putting months and months and months into it and stuff. For example, I gave myself 3 months. If I didn't get a client within 3 months, I move on to something else. I know that's a short amount of time. And my brother, he's been far more persistent than that. But it's definitely realistic for you to cut your losses to save amount of times, because who knows, there might be a venture right around the corner for you to start, aside from what you're doing right now.
Love it, man. I don't have anything to add. You were completely spot on. And that's definitely something I'm going to be listening to over and over. So it's awesome, man. Of course. So that's pretty much it for the main segment of the podcast. Now, next up, I'm going to ask you the question I ask everybody on the mm-hmm. podcast, and then it's going to be some quick fire questions.
All right. Awesome.
Perfect. So the goal I ask everyone is, what are the goals? What are your goals for the future? And when I mean future, I mean 1 to 10 years. So like, we're thinking like long-term over here.
Yeah. So within, I'll break it up into three different parts. So within sure. 1 to 3 years, from now to the next 3 years, I definitely want to have an established email marketing brand that is also providing Facebook ads, SEO, a bunch of things. That everything will be done in-house. I'll have a huge team, everything sort of working in unison, and I'll be able to collect 100K profit per month passively without me being able to get to that point. I've seen it done, and I genuinely think I could get to that point.
100%.
So within 3 years from now, or after 3 years from now, I definitely want to start getting into some sort of obviously investments, whether it's stock and crypto. I am sort of dabbled into crypto, but it's something that I'd want to put a lot more focus into within those after I have something that's making me passive money every single month, right? Mm-hmm. Because a huge thing for me is if I have money to spare every single month, to my future, right? I can have money to invest in certain investments, right? So definitely 5 years from now, whether it's doing like e-commerce or having stores for myself, I want to have some sort of tangible investments done, whether it's having, you know, actual brand set up, investing in those, getting percentage, or having a nice stock portfolio, or even real estate. That's what it looks like. I'd say around the 7 to 10 year mark, that's when I'd be sort of taking or I'd want to take an exit or anything. I know in this industry, it's very difficult to exit with your marketing brands, but I do honestly, truly believe that I can get to a point where I can sell off my agency and be able to exit with a good amount. And from there, I'd want to become a full-time stock trader or invest in real estate and solely do one of those two things within the next 7 to 10 years. So that's what my outlook looks like. And school's definitely not in any one of those years. So hopefully everything goes good. Then yeah, that's my outlook for the next 10 years.
Hopefully, man. Inshallah, everything goes well, bro.
Inshallah.
Yeah, man, you're only 18, and it's like, I'm 22. By the time you're my age, bro, like, you're already killing it. So much more in store. I'm excited for you.
Definitely.
Awesome, man. So moving on, quick fire questions. I have five over here. Really easy to answer. Whatever comes at the top of your head, we'll hear it, okay?
All right, awesome.
Awesome. So question number one, favorite music to listen to before or after a sales call? Get you hyped up or like celebrating?
Lil Baby. Whatever, Lil Baby.
Amazing. Lil Baby. Same thing as Splash, same thing 100%. As me. The goat. Question number two, favorite pastime outside of your work?
Going for walks, or recently it's been tennis. I played tennis with Splash and Hayden at their court, and I've been playing with my friend recently as well. So it's as of now, that would be it. But for me, majority of the time when I have a long day, I go out. If it's a sunny day, I'll go out for a nice walk, and that's what it is for me.
Beautiful. Question number three, most memorable client moment. This can be like you signed someone on and you got really excited. This can be you made them a ton of money. This can be something funny that happened. It can be anything.
For my most memorable client, it's actually the opposite. It's not someone I made money for. It was what happened. I ended up making my client $50,000 in a month. I made them 50K in a month. Mm-hmm. My cut was close to like 11K US, so like 15K Canadian, mm-hmm. right? And they didn't pay me, so I had to sue them.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's like the most memorable thing. That's the most off the top of my head memorable thing. Mm-hmm. There's other things that I've been happy about, but like that was a moment where I was just like, wow, I did not expect this to happen.
Definitely. I mean, hey, it was still memorable. It doesn't have to be a good thing.
Exactly.
Insane. Question number four, favorite sport?
Favorite sport? Basketball. Always been basketball.
Watch, play, both?
Play, both.
Nice. And last question, number five, most memorable purchase with your profits? You finally got your cut. What was the most memorable thing? It can be like the first thing you got or favorite thing, whatever.
So once again, most memorable thing was, okay, so I got these CDG or Comme des Garçons Converse, right? They're about like $300 at the time I got them. And they're probably like the most good looking shoes in my collection, but the most uncomfortable. But like, I love them. I love them because they're so unique and they're cool and stuff. But like that was a teaching lesson for me not to buy a designer, because any sort of designer that I've worn, it hasn't been comfortable. It's just not comfortable.
Okay, is this only for shoes, or like does this go for like shirts, jackets?
Yeah, if it's comfortable, then yeah, go for it. But if it's not comfortable, don't go out of your way to look cool and sacrifice comfortability. Because now, like, I wear Ultra Boosts, I wear Yeezys. Yeezys are expensive, but I still wear them because they're more comfortable, right? So 100%. As long as they're comfortable, then it's fine.
Love it. Awesome, man. Well, that's pretty much it from me today. Omar, thank you so much for joining us. It was a huge pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, man. Huge pleasure speaking to you, and I'm sure we'll have you on again sometime in the future.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Right. And and for everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. Hope you got a lot of value out of this, and I'll catch you guys in the next episode. Take care. So I hope you guys enjoyed that episode. If you did, go ahead and subscribe on whatever platform you're using to listen. And I'll catch you guys next Monday.